No, it's not accurate. This is it's meant to explain how to stop, how to learn to stop worrying. Fear is different story. So I'm going to talk about some progress in understanding how to glue together instantons and anti-instantons. So the story for me began a long time ago when I foolishly thought that by computing something in gauge theory, I understood some things well enough that I could write a book. But the book has to have an introduction. And so I thought that, well, I would explain in the introduction how the textbooks explain how one uses instantons to calculate some, let's say, the splitting of energy levels. In quantum mechanics, and well, I thought that instead of just copying from textbooks, I would try to explain it in my own words, and then I got stuck because I couldn't. Well, I will explain to you where I got stuck, and so for many years, I couldn't get past this introduction until fairly recently, where certain things which were developing independently all came together and the picture started to emerge, which probably will let me pass the introduction at some point. So so the problem, the textbook problem is the following. You study, let's say, a particle in one dimensions, living in a potential, which I will take to be quartic with the symmetry, with reflection symmetry. And so you're interested in the spectrum of the Schrödinger operator. And as it is well known, you can, so if the potential is sufficiently high, you can roughly approximate your potential near each of the minima by essentially a harmonic oscillator, solve the Schrödinger equation for harmonic oscillator, and then try to do perturbation theory to correct the spectrum in order by order in expansion in the coupling constant or effective coupling constant. And so that way you get, if I restore the Planck constant, so you have two identical eigenvalues to all orders in perturbation theory. So let me write. So you have the wave functions, the eigenfunctions, which are localized near the left and the right minimum of the potential, and the perturbation series are identical. And so to all order in h-bar expansion, the eigenvalues are equal. In particular, they're equal for the ground state, so the lowest energy state. And there you run into the usual contradiction with the fact that Schrödinger equation in one dimension cannot have degenerate ground states. You can prove it by variational method, for example. And so it must be that the levels are not equal, but the splitting has some non-analytic in h-bar dependence, so that you don't see it in perturbation theory, but as a function of h-bar, they are not equal. And in fact, again, using variational method, you can actually show that the true ground state will be even, and then the excited state will be odd, so E tilde is greater than E. And so the question is, how do you compute this difference? So the way the textbook, or the textbooks, or the lore, whatever, or rumors, so how you use it, approach this is by looking at the Euclidean time evolution operator. It's an operator e to the minus beta h hat. And I will write something which mathematicians will not like, but I will later correct this. So you compute the matrix element of the evolution operator between the generalized states, which describe the particle sitting at the right minimum and the left minimum. Let me call this M minus beta, and the diagonal matrix element . So formally speaking, what this is the sum over the spectrum of the Schrödinger equation or Schrödinger operator e to the minus beta, the corresponding eigenvalue. Then you take the wave function, normalized wave function of this eigenstate evaluated at A times the wave function. The conjugate wave function evaluated at minus A, and here I think so. When beta goes to infinity, the excited states, the higher the levels with high energies will not contribute, they will be exponentially suppressed. So this is will go as the minus beta, the ground state, and then I'm using this knowledge to say that this is so psi ground of A absolute value squared plus the next term will be the excited state, the first excited state. And here we use the fact that this wave function is odd, so there will be a minus sign. Plus negligible terms, and here you get the same thing with the plus sign. So if you can evaluate these two matrix elements for large beta, subtract one from another, or divide by the sum, you will extract the difference. So I can write this as minus delta . So the goal is to really to evaluate the ratio of these two matrix elements and to extract the non-trivial beta-dependent part that will give you the energy splitting. So so far so good. Now there is a path integral representation for this matrix element. So it's, again, I'm quoting textbooks, so it's not exactly what I will be using, but so you look for paths. So you study the integral over paths, which are parameterized paths, with parameter t goes from zero to beta. And so for me, time goes from right to left. So when you see this matrix element, you read it in Hebrew. So it's you start at A, and then you end at minus A. And here you put the Euclidean action. So the action, maybe I should stress that this is Euclidean action. So the difference between the Euclidean in this level action and usual action is that the sign of the, there is an extra minus sign in front of the potential. Okay, and so, and then if I have plus here, I put plus there. So this is the integral over the maps of an interval with boundary, with specified boundary conditions. And so when beta goes to infinity or h bar goes to zero, effectively you are looking at the saddle points in this integral, and this is where the fun part starts. So the saddle points, of course, let me call them critical points. Well, you vary your action, and you get the equations of motion, which, because of this minus sign, correspond to the motion in inverted potential. And in fact, because it's the one-dimensional problem, so the if you start exactly at minus A or at A, strictly speaking, so there is a solution which just stays there forever, and that would be a dominant solution for the boundary condition where both on both ends you have A as a boundary condition. But if you're forced to have A on the right hand side and minus A on the left hand side, at some point you have to leave this local maximum with inversion, and so you will go down the hill then back. But just as in the gradient equations which Misha discussed, it actually takes an infinite time to get from one maximum to another one. And so that's the solution which minimizes the Euclidean action in infinite time. Say it again?
You can start with a zero velocity.
Yes.
If you start with zero, you
right. Right. But as you know, so if you start with a non-zero velocity here, you will actually miss. So, but anyway, so let's. I'm just quoting the textbooks. Okay. So for beta equals to infinity, there is a minimizer which actually starts with zero velocity. For a very, very long time near A, then there is some finite time when it crosses over, and then it stays for a very long time near minus A until it reaches it. And so it actually solves. So this is the equation of motion which you will get by varying S tilde would be second order in time derivative. But if you want to minimize it, you can use Pogomolny trick. Write this as a square root of plus the so this is minus u, okay, so u is positive, so I can take a square root of 2u, and but there are two, you can write this as an integral of complete square in two different ways, plus or minus, so it would be minus plus and then there will be a something like square root of 2u at the boundaries. So you can so this is fixed by the boundary conditions. So to minimize, you minimize this term, and then you get that x dot is plus or minus square root of 2u. And since in my case I want to start at positive a and end up at negative a, I will choose this as my sign. And you can find it explicitly what it is. You'll also find that the solution is not unique. There is no, since beta is equal to infinity for this solution, you can translate it in time. So x of t is some, let me call it standard, let me call it psi of. In fact, let me write it this way. So psi is some function like hyperbolic tangent and omega zero is essentially the second derivative of the potential at the critical point. So this is when we started by approximating the potential by harmonic oscillator, that's the frequency of the harmonic oscillator which you will get. So this solution has what's called the zero mode or the modulus. This is the moment of time when this particle decides suddenly stop sitting there and try something new and goes to another critical point. But as you can see, there is no beta dependence on the solution. It takes really an infinite time to cross from positive a to negative a. But the textbook says, okay, well, maybe there is a solution which is close by for finite beta, finite very large beta, and then we will use this solution and its conjugate and the superpositions. This is where it becomes really tricky. So this is now Euclidean time. This is x. So I started at, this is plus a, this is minus a. So I started at plus a, then I crossed over to minus a. This is the moment of time t0 for this solution. And this crossing happens in, essentially the interesting stuff happens in within the finite time of the order omega zero inverse. And then, why not try to superimpose it with another solution which starts minus a and goes to plus a. That's moment of time t1, and so on and so forth. So then you have these configurations, let me call them configurations because I don't want to call them solutions. And these are the instanton, anti-instanton configurations. So in order to approximate this matrix model, this matrix element, I would need to have one instanton more than anti-instanton. So for m minus, we take n plus 1 solutions of this form, ti plus minus t, and n solutions of this form, t minus t, I minus. And for m plus, we take an equal number of instantons and anti-instantons because we have to come back. And instantons, so I will call this an instanton, this solution an instanton. And the configuration of this sort, I will call the anti-instanton. And then, so one pretends these to be the saddle points of this section. So then one evaluates the matrix, the the second variation of the action around such a configuration, computes the determinant, gets the stationary phase approximation to this integral, and after summing over all these configurations, one arrives at the expression, which is very reasonable and nice, that delta E is of the order e to the minus, what did I write? Yes, I0 over h bar, where I0 is essentially an action on an instanton, or maybe instanton, anti-instanton. It's an integral okay, so that's that's the textbook. Then, of course, people realize that these are actually not the solutions. Even even for infinite beta, once you combine these configurations together, they are no longer solutions. Not only on the first order equations, they are not solutions of the second order equations. So they are actually not on this configuration. The variation of the action is not zero, which means that when you expand an action around such configuration, you actually get linear terms, what we call tadpoles in physics. And so it means that you have to shift your reference point in the field space so as to move, so as to eliminate the tadpoles. And so that procedure was performed by Bogomolny, which and that led him to conclude that these parameters t0, t1, and so on, which we call the moduli, so we simply integrate over them. They actually so there is some potential induced on the module on this modular space of these configurations. In other words, in the jargon of the old textbooks, so these instantons, anti-instantons form an ideal gas, but if you take into account the tadpoles, then the gas is no longer ideal. There is some interaction potential, and then it becomes very complicated. So Schwartz, according to Bogomolny, actually, Albert Schwartz interpreted this procedure of eliminating the tadpoles as a first step in Newton's method of finding a true critical point of a function. A true solution of equation, more generally. So if you want to have some function with some convexity, which is sufficiently convex, and you want to find, so you want to solve the equation f equals to zero, and you start somewhere randomly. Well, what you do, you find the tangent line, and then you look where this tangent line crosses the axis, so this new point is what we would call the result of eliminating of tadpoles. So here you approximated the function by the linear one. This function is like this is like the derivative of them of my action. So what we're interested in are the solutions of equations of motion, and so we can solve them, by consecutive approximations. So, so this interpretation suggests that this is this configuration of instantons and anti-instantons is just the first approximation, first step in the procedure, which should lead somewhere. So, where is this point, and what is this true solution around which we should expand? What? We know.
It's simply a solution of the ODE, right? It's a question.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the point is that it's not simply the solution of ODE, because so what was the mistake that textbook was making was that it was assuming that the solution, it's not a mistake, I don't know. Somehow we were looking for the solutions where X was visible to the naked eye, so when it was a real variable. But in fact, nobody told us that the critical points of this exponential integral should lie on the real axis. So let's be a little bit more consistent about it. Let's just go back to the basics, to the initial point. In fact, it will be more convenient for me, instead of evaluating these matrix elements, I would be interested in the partition function, just a trace over the Hilbert space of e to the minus beta h hat. It's the same information about the spectrum, of course. And so what I want to do, I want to go back to this integral. I want to write it. So it will turn out to be more illuminating to view it as a path integral in phase space, not in configuration space. So and then we'll treat the path integral as a period. And so then things will become hopefully cleaner and clearer. Okay, so what's the path integral interpretation of this partition function? Well, it's an integral over now the loops in the phase space. So the phase space for this model is two-dimensional. So P is R2. Now, these are parameterized loops. And so x of t plus beta is equal to x of t. And p. And now the action, we will write. And so there is some subtlety. The first term you've seen in the initial lecture. Well, there is I over h bar. And then what distinguishes the Minkowski versus Euclidean is that the next term will. So in Euclidean partition function, which is what I'm computing here, there's no I in front of the Hamiltonian. So there is a Hamiltonian. There is one over h bar. And my Hamiltonian is. Simply this. Okay, so now we are facing the same problem, except that once I said the words the period, what do I mean by that? So so now this line, this tiny line will represent all of the loop space of my real phase space. And I want to think of it as of a middle dimensional submanifold of the loop space of the complexified phase space. Now, the complexified phase space is a tricky business. It's not something which is always well defined and it's not always unique. But let's, for the moment, proceed in a naive way. So let me just make P and X complex. Except that now, when you look at the levels of the energy levels of this complexified Hamiltonian, so the Hamiltonian now becomes a holomorphic function on the on this. So this is a now complex symplectic manifold with holomorphic symplectic form. So what I want to compactify the energy levels. It's a partial compactification of the space where. So the level, the energy levels, as you can see from the original, I just erased. So my U was the quartic polynomial. So the levels of constant value of the Hamiltonian are non-compact elliptic curves. So I want to compactify. I will add a couple of points to each fiber to make it compact. So compared to the naive complexification, so this is like C2 union with some, I would say, couple curves. So to make this compact. So for each value of complex energy, I will now have an elliptic curve. And so this complexified phase space becomes now a vibration over the complex line where the energy takes values, with the generic fiber being a smooth elliptic curve. But there are certain levels, energy levels, for which the fiber degenerates. And you know what these levels are. These are the levels which correspond to the absolute minimum of the energy or the local maximum. So this is equals to zero, and this is equal to something like lambda a to the 4/4.
Sorry, I'm a bit confused.
Yes.
PC here seems to me to be a subset of PQ.
Why is it a subset?
Well, you're saying it's elements in PQ that satisfy an equation.
So it's a compactification of the set. You see, it's a partial compactation.
Oh, there's a bar. Okay,
it's a bar. And it's so it's obtained by adding to C2 something which... Right. Now, physically, what that means is the following. As you all know, this quartic potential has this funny feature that if you invert it and start falling off the cliff, not in the safe direction, but in the another direction, you'll reach infinity at finite time. And so I'm adding this infinity. And moreover, this infinity is so funny that you actually reappear from the other side. So that's the weird complexification of this phase space. But anyway, my loops, so this original integral was over the loops in the real space, the real phase space. Now I want to view it as a contour in a loop space of complexified phase space. And so my z is an integral of some top degree holomorphic form with so this let me call this function s. So this s has I and no I, both terms. So and I want to treat this integral as a contour integral. So I'm going to deform my contour in a standard way, so as to make it lie along the path of steepest descent. And so we can do it using the gradient flow. In this notation, for the real part of S over H bar. Notice that from that moment, h bar could have been a complex number. So it's the real part of s divided by h bar, which governs the flow. And so, well, maybe it's negative. So I want this quantity, right? So I want the real part of s over h bar to become larger and larger along the flow, so that exponential becomes smaller and smaller. And so my integral converges better and better. And so it will stop at some critical point, at the critical points. It will probably break up somewhere. And so my original integral over the real space, real loops, will split as a sum with some coefficients of the integrals of the periods corresponding to critical points. And so these are the true critical points of the action, which as the picture suggests, we should be looking for among the loops in the complexified phase space. And we will find them momentarily. Just wanted to make one remark. So these contours, which are assigned to critical points, they're called Lefschetz symbols, and which I believe was invented by Pham in the early 80s. And I realized recently that that was a very bad term, because Lefschetz had no arms. So it's kind of a derogatory. So I would rather call them Lefschetz bells or something like that. Anyway, So today, what I'm going to talk about, I will not be able to compute for you the integrals of an individual bells, but I will classify completely the critical points. And we will see how this old picture of instantons and anti-instantons get. Yeah, so I will not be able to tell you with 100% certainty which ones will contribute. I have a feeling that all of them will contribute, at least in this example. But I think that's a complicated problem in general. And then I will explain how this picture generalizes to quantum mechanics with several degrees of freedom, including quantization of Hitchin system, and possibly to quantum field theory. Because that's, you see, the reason why this subject is frustrating is that this technique of instantons and anti-instantons is claimed to be not applicable beyond quantum mechanics. So already in single models in two dimensions, people found that this dilute instanton gas approximation doesn't work. And I want to argue, without much substance though, that since these were not at subtle points to begin with, I mean, so what? We should be looking at the true subtle points and see what is their contribution. So, but that's the speculative part. So let me.
Okay, if that's not gas, it's not gas, it's about the value.
Yeah, so the idea is not bad, but it should be, it was not worked through. It was a preliminary idea, but it was sold as a final idea. Okay, so, all right, so what are the critical points? Let's just be now completely free of prejudice and just solve the damn equations. Well, these are Hamilton equations, except that there is an I there. So we'll just vary x dot is equal to, I'm varying respect to p first. I will get then minus I p dot is equal to okay, so these are my equations. So what the textbooks usually do, they solve for h of this form. So this is actually p. So they substitute this first equation to the second equation, and then it appears that you're back to the real differential equation, because you see no i's. And that was the source of the confusion, that you thought that's a real differential equation, so why not look for real solutions? But when you look at it this way, it's obvious that, well, this is just, you know, vector field and a complex manifold, so let's just look for its trajectories. And now this becomes trivial once you pass to action angle variables. So we can go from Px so I is some function of the energy. Which is normalized in such a way that the conjugate variable phi has periodicity 2 pi. So that's what's so special about the action angle variables. And in the real complexity geometry, we know that if the level sets of the Hamiltonian, or if you have, in an integrable case, if you have several Hamiltonians, if they're compact, then the level set is a real torus. That's Liouville-Arnold theorem, and so they can choose the coordinates on this torus, linear coordinates, which with periodicity 2 pi, and that gives you the proper normalization of angles, and then the conjugate action variables. So you can write this I as 1 over 2 pi, the period of pdx. But now we're in a complex situation, so instead of the Liouville torus of real dimension 1, we have an elliptic curve. And that curve has two cycles, two one cycles. So you can define an action variable relative to the A cycle, whatever you mean by the A cycle. Let me call it, instead of I, I'll call it A, as we do in gauge theory. Or you can define it relative to the B cycle. We do. And both are equally well, equally valid coordinates on the base. And then the conjugate variables will be normalized. Sorry. So we will write this as dA times d phi or dA dual times d phi dual. So phi is such that d phi is a holomorphic one differential on the elliptic curve on the fiber normalized so that its period on the A, along the A cycle is equal to 2 pi. And then the dual guy has the B period equal to 2 pi. But then this guy has a B period, which is 2 pi times tau, which is the modular parameter of the elliptic curve. And so the main novelty of the complex case compared to the real case is that the angles have double periodicity. By 2 pi. So in looking for the periodic solutions of this equation, remember, we are looking for periodic solutions. We are on the loop space. When we pass to the action angle variables, well, these equations will tell you that, let's say, in the A5 frame, these equations are equivalent to saying that A dot is equal to 0, and phi dot is equal to d h over dA. So there is this inverse map. Okay, so this makes A as a function of E. And so there is an inverse, let me call it as dE. It's an inverse function. So phi is a function of time, is phi of 0 plus simply linear thing. And we want this solution to be periodic on the elliptic curve, which means that phi of beta has to be equal to phi of 0 plus one of these periods. Which means that we have now a quantization condition of sorts, which says that the energy levels on which these periodic trajectories will be sitting are to be found from the equation that dE over dA is equal to beta times dE over dA is equal to m plus n tau of A times 2 pi. All right, so this is nice and worrisome. It's worrisome because nobody told us what do we call, what is the A cycle, what is the B cycle. It's kind of an arbitrary choice. Fortunately, here we differentiate with respect to variable A, which is defined relative to this choice of the A cycle. So we can rewrite this equation in a slightly more invariant fashion. So these equations are equivalent to the equation that the following superpotential Wmn has a critical point. So W is m times n plus a plus n times a dual minus beta over 2 pi times e. I may have missed some factors of I, by the way, but probably it wasn't I here. I think it should. 2 pi is usually 2 pi I. So where this superpotential is defined? It's It is defined. So E is a well-defined function on my phase space and on the base of this phase space. But these guys, A and A dual, are actually sections of a local system. So they're defined relative to the choice of a basis in first homology, and that basis changes as you go around the discriminant, which are the points where my elliptic curves degenerate. So this is defined on the cover, on the partial cover of the complement of the base to the discriminant, and so on this cover, this is well defined. So it's a pairing of it's a choice of a cycle. But more invariantly, this is really so my cover is a pair which consists of an elliptic curve in this family and the choice of one cycle on the curve.
Is it extremized on the base?
Yes, so that's where you need to extremize. Yeah, it's a function of E. The fine dimension. So we start with the functional, and we have now just a function. Okay, but in general, this is a transcendental equation. However, for this purpose of the evaluation of the ground state energy, we need to study only the limit B goes to infinity. And there, something interesting happens. So then you can actually solve this equation approximately. So let me blow up the picture. So this is the energy complex line. And so what happens is that the solutions will be concentrated near E equals to zero. So remember, this textbook solution, which had beta equals to infinity, had energy equals to zero. So that was this where the textbook solution was sitting. But we are now working for finite, at finite, large but finite beta. And so the local geometry is the following, that the elliptic curve over this point equals to zero degenerate. So it develops in.
This is the same solution as we used for critical point, n equal one, n equal one larger.
I will get there if I have time. Yes, I will get it. So if this is, it's not accidental that I call this superpotential. It's a Landau-Ginzburg potential of a two-dimensional n equals two theory, which you can get by compactifying n equals two theory in four dimensions on two torus. And then there is a cigar. So it's a how much time do I actually have? I have time. Okay. Okay. So let me just tell you. So over this point e equals to zero, the curve develops a node. So we have nearby curves, there is a well-defined vanishing cycle. So that's what I will call the A cycle. So A cycle is well-defined. The B cycle is defined up to the Picard-Lefschetz transformation. So the dual cycle is defined up to the A cycle. So the formulas which I'm going to present will know about it. So, right. So we know that, well, basically, because of this feature, the period along the dual cycle will have this universal A over 2 pi I log A. So A goes to 0 when E goes to 0. So A has an expansion. C1 times E plus corrections, and A dual has this universal piece, which reproduces the Picard-Lefschetz monodromy, plus there is something finite, which actually happens to be the instanton action, plus some corrections.
Two cycle shrink.
So the cycle, the vanishing cycle. Well, it's okay. So if you go, if you look at this picture, it looks like you have. So what shrinks to zero, of course, when the energy goes down, is this cycle. But they are homologous. It's the same cycle, on the elliptic curve.
But the toes break down into two CP1s.
Well, you can. There are two ways of thinking. Yeah, you can mod out by x goes to minus x, p goes to minus p symmetry. Yes. Then it will be just one nodal point. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so let me not worry about the factors of two. I'm usually describing this in a quotient space, where this is also an elliptic curve. And so this is essentially that becomes a simple formula, simple matter to extremize this potential. So MA plus NA dual. So we want to extremize it, and the result is that okay, so there will be some exponentially small value of the energy divided by n. So n is the let's say this. So n is the number of so this is my elliptic curve, and this is the trajectory which we are looking for. So on this elliptic curve, there is this vanishing cycle which we mentioned, which is well defined. And so n, which will be the well-defined number, it's an intersection number of the trajectory with the vanishing cycle. So this number is well defined. M, the other number, the intersection with the B cycle is not well defined, because the B cycle is defined up to the A cycle. Therefore, M is defined modulo N only. And so that's the formula reflects that. So there is a choice of the nth root of unity. And so the structure of the solutions is that they form what I call a solar system. So there is a solution with n equals to 1, which is exponentially close, but still not identical to 0. And then there are two solutions with n equals 2. And then there are three solutions. I'm running out of color. Three solutions with n equals 3, and so on. But actually, they don't expand too much. They actually sit all within some radius. So there is some scale here determined by the essentially the height of the potential. So it's some fixed number here. So what are these numbers? What do they correspond to in this old picture? Well, if you draw, again, the potential, except that now, of course, since everything is complex, these trajectories will not fit any real slice. Nevertheless, qualitatively, the A cycle, the vanishing cycle, is the cycle which corresponds to the classically allowed motion. So these are small, we would call them small fluctuations around the classical minimum. And then the B cycle is what we call the tunneling amplitude. So this N literally is a number of instanton-instanton pairs. But then this M, the new number, it's a kind of fluctuations which address, so the classical fluctuations which are addressing them. So if you, in other words, another picture which I like to draw is, if I view my elliptic curve as the quotient of the rectangle, then these naive solutions with instantons and anti-instantons would look like for piecewise horizontal motions on this curve, on this rectangle, which are then spliced by some vertical jumps just to make this picture periodic. But of course, it's from looking at the, at this picture, you see it cannot be a critical point of any or any reasonable functional. So then, once you start extremizing the action starting with this solution, what will happen? As we know from D-brains, these things will start bending. Until they become just a straight, constant slope, rational windings on the torus. And so in some sense, these solutions are what we would call the bound states of instantons, anti-instantons, and perturbative quanta. So these are the perturbative I'm describing the saddle points for the path integral. So it's, and as you can see, they have complicated beta dependence. So it's, I'm not claiming that I have derived any energy levels of the. So these energies, these are classical energies of this, which are just some features of the solutions. They do not correspond to the eigenvalues of the quantum Hamiltonian. This is something which has to be done on top of that. I'm not yet there yet. So it's a complicated issue, actually, because of the.
You don't have a prescription yet.
No. It's a I have a prescription. I just don't know how to implement it.
It's
You need to do it right. It's all right. So, but anyway, so this is just saying that the number of Lefschetz bells which we have in already in quantum mechanics is roughly speaking twice as large as we originally have thought, because they are labeled not only by instanton, anti-instanton number, but also there is some dressing which becomes as large, well, larger and larger with the larger instanton number coming from the perturbative modes.
So a lot of these have energy which is goes one way to be able to.
Right. So the action. So this is the
action.
Yes. So the action is. So naively would say that there will be a term, because there is this integral of h over the period of time beta. You think that it will be something like beta times exponential minus beta, but in fact this part will cancel against the first term, and so these actions will actually have. So they will have a form like n times the instanton action, which was instanton and anti-instanton action, plus exponentially small correction.
The phase is complicated. They all have.
The phase is a complicated issue. So the phase comes not only. I think there is some misconception that people think that the phase comes just from the imaginary part of the action.
Well, that A0 is multiplied by phase into the 2 pi I m over n.
Yeah, it will still be there. It will still
but
be.
It's not in front of s. I mean, s does not the phase of s.
No. Well, it's
because there was a beta e naively at the top.
No, it's not so
that's actually positive for all of this.
Well, I0 it's a complex number in general. So I mean these periods are complex. It's for the real potential, yes, it will be the leading part will be positive.
So they potentially all could
come. Yeah. The tricky part is to evaluate. Okay, so if you remember in the story which I sketched, the correction to the energy, so this guy, comes about from the fluctuations. So you actually, so these guys, so this in the Tolt approach, that came from the integral of the positions of instantons and anti-instantons. And because those solutions were believed to have zero modes. This solution, as you can see, well, what are the zero modes of the solution? It's just, you can just translate it overall on the elliptic curve. It's one complex number. So the saddle, the critical point locus is a copy of elliptic curve. Now, in this period integrals, it means that this Lefschetz bell is actually built, it starts at one cycle on this elliptic curve. which is also a matter of choice. But at any rate, the number of zero modes is independent of n on the number of instantons. And so instead, these guys should come from the fluctuations.
Cancellation m.
Yeah, so m will, the summation of m will probably ensure some, you know, the period, some kind of period, I don't know. So these fractional powers will probably go away and something like that. But it's a long story, I'm afraid. But nevertheless, at least I'm confident that the foundation is solid now. So these are the true subtle points. So now we can proceed. Okay, let me just finish with a couple of remarks about higher dimensional. Oh yeah, sorry. The first remark is how this generalizes, you could have guessed, of course, how this generalizes to the high dimensional phase spaces. So if we're lucky, so that this complexified phase space is an algebraic integrable system, and we believe that in quantizing it, we can preserve the integrability, so we'll get the maximal number of commuting Hamiltonians. So when I say by quantizing, so you quantize the real phase space, some real slice, the real slice of an algebraic integrable system. But again, to analyze the spectrum of these Hamiltonians, I will have to use the algebraic integrable system. And so to each of these Hamiltonians, you can assign the generalized temperature. So this partition function will be, this is generalized Hibbs ensemble, a generating function of the spectrum of all Hamiltonians. And then this analysis will carry over with the conclusion that you will be minimizing the superpotential of this form. Okay, so the picture is that you have the base, which is parameterized by the values of the classical integrals of motion. Over each point on the base, you have an abelian variety, principally polarized abelian variety of dimension r. So this is the r-dimensional base, domain in the vector space. And so you get, again, so there is some discriminant of singular curves, oh, singular abelian varieties, and so the you take the cover, you take a partial cover of the complement by choosing a one cycle on the fiber over a point. So the choice of one cycle and the point on the base gives you this partial.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an assumption. It's an assumption. That's a definition of what of this thing. So it's not going to work for any classical mechanical system, but for those the formulas are nice. And then so this can be derived from n equals 2 gauge theory of four dimensions. This is actually where this whole story came from. It's just that in the end you can simplify some of the steps. All right, so you study gauge theory on the product of two torus times a cigar. So the cigar will have the parameter h bar. And you can view it, the theory, in two ways. If you first compactify on cigar, you'll get two-dimensional n equals two theory, which has some beta gauge dual. And so the Hamiltonians of this quantum integrable system will correspond to some observables in gauge theory. And if you compute the partition function by first compactifying on T2, you will get the theory n equals 2 Landau-Ginzburg theory on the disk. And M and N would be the fluxes, the choice of fluxes through the two torus. and H will come from a choice of observables. So that's the gauge theory take on this formalism. Now, we don't have to stop at finite dimensions, in finite dimensions. And of course, the first interesting case would be to look at the Segal model. Yes.
Was I was very optimistic. And what I tried to do the Kralieff still equations for W still doing them fast.
You could, but unfortunately, so what I tried to do, I tried to look at the gradient flow equations for S.
Yes.
And you discover that You see the critical loop. The starting point or end point of the flow is a loop which sits on a fiber. Okay, so its projection onto the base is just one point. But the moment you start the flow, unfortunately, it starts, kind of getting spiky in all directions on the base. So maybe there is an approximation where this loop is still small.
If I was essentially, I'm wondering if I can think about the supersymmetric theory based on S.
W is a reduction of S, of course. It's sort of a reduction in the sense that you treat the angle variables as fast variables, and so if you solve for them first, that's what you get from this is from the PDQ part, and that's just the but that assumes that assumes that your loops are essentially they don't spread over the base. Yes. So the, of course, that's right. So that's what I'm saying. So I played with this problem in the limit when I use a semi-flat metric. So there is and so in that limit, it doesn't seem to be consistent approximation. So of course you may hope that maybe when you go to three-dimensional limit when R goes to zero, that will be the better approximation. But then you don't know the metric. It becomes a mess. So. Life is not always easy, but maybe it is not that harsh. All right, let me just say that what can one do in Segal models? So especially since Nigel is here, it would be nice to mention him in other contexts other than the Hitchin system. Suppose we study the what's called the O3 model. Actually, it will be clear that ON model is not that different. And now this is actually a good point because for instanton-wise, these models are very different. So there are instantons as holomorphic maps for maps to S2, but not to the higher dimensional sphere, simply because of the topology. But it seems that the structure of the saddle points is more or less the same. So the saddle points, remember, they are now, in some proper sense, the bound states of instantons, anti-instantons, and perturbative quantum. Okay, so what are the lessons which we learned from that case? Lessons were that, first of all, we don't take beta to infinity. So beta is finite, large but finite. It means that, unlike the usual premise of instanton calculus, where you take Euclidean space to be infinite in all directions, and then you compactify it to some sphere, here, I will take, there will be the time circle, which will be finite, and I might as well keep my space circle to be finite as well. So my problem will be to look for the maps of a two torus into a sphere. But now the lesson there was that we complexify the phase space, and so we will complexify the sphere. And so what does it mean? Well, it means that we study the maps to a quadric. We call it x n minus 1, x n minus 1 sits in Cn and is given by the equations by notation Ci. Okay, so and what are the equations which govern those maps? Well, these are the complex versions of harmonic map equations, which you can write as, let me write first the action. So instead of imposing this equation, I will add Lagrange multiplier to my action functional. Notice that there is no z bar. So if the action is holomorphic as far as the target space coordinates are concerned, and I use some complex structure, the complex structure on T2. And so you're solving the equations z bar with the constraint. And there are various approaches to this problem. The one which was pushed by Nigel was to interpret these equations as a flat connection, as consistency conditions for as a flat connection with spectral parameter, and then study the spectral curve. As far as I remember, most work there was to ensure that the solution is real and non-singular. But here, all bets are off. We've complexified, so the reality is no longer a concern. Well, it seems to be right now that the most promising approach to analysis of these equations is based on a slightly different notion, which we call the Fermi curve. So this is what I'm doing with Igor Krichever. So the idea is that you view this as the two-dimensional Schrödinger equation with some potential u, which is called the. So let me parameterize T2 by holomorphic coordinate W, which has two periodicities. So this U is doubly periodic. Potential, which from these equations you can actually express in terms of Z. But first, let's analyze this for generic potential. And so what it turns out what's convenient to do is to study this problem in a slightly more general context, which can actually be also studied in two-dimensional, is in the finite-dimensional case. Namely, you allow twisted boundary conditions. So couple it to flat ONC, by the way, connection on T2. So it means that these ZIs don't have to be doubly periodic. They may have some monodromies. And so since this equation is identical for all ZIs, you just study the a curve, what do you call this? Fermi curve. This is from condensed matter motivations. So it's a curve in C star cross C star, which consists of the which is the moduli space of flat. It's Bahn, not Bahn. It's flat C star connections on T2. And so this curve consists of the connections for which the there is a solution. There is a solution with psi representing this this flat connection. That is, so this is the definition of this curve. Well, to give you a kind of flavor, what kind of curve is that? It's a let's assume that u is a constant, a very simple periodic potential, non-zero constant. Then you know how to solve this equation. If u is constant, then psi is you solve it in plane waves, where k and k bar are related by a dispersion relation, which is something like that. So for any k in C, this is a solution, the solution of this equation. And now it has a monodromy, So A is exponential of K plus UK inverse, and B is exponential of K tau plus U tau bar K inverse. So this curve is what? It's an image of a rational curve of our line by this exponential map. It's not obvious immediately, but you can check that actually for any pair of integers, this image has a node. The curve really looks like this lattice. So there are this line of k's is actually folded by this map in such a way that you have points kmn minus and kmn plus, which are mapped to one, and these are simple nodes, the double points. You can compactify it by adding the points k equals to zero, k equals to infinity, but then once you perturb this constant u to a generic periodic potential, the Fourier modes of this potential corresponding to numbers mn will basically resolve these nodal points, and so you'll get eventually you will get a curve of what would appear to be an infinite genus curve, but it seems that the solutions which are non-singular will always have a finite genus curve corresponding to it. And so you can get reverse engineer this. So start with the smooth curve of finite genus and recover the structure. And so you will get the solutions for z in terms of some theta functions for that genus g curve. I don't know how close it is to the complete classification, but that gives a lot of solutions. And since compared to the quantum mechanical case, we passed from a system with finite number of degrees of freedom to a system of infinite number of degrees of freedom, my initial fear was that what played the role of this tori, finite rank tori, which on which we had to find this rational windings, would become an infinite dimensional tori, and that probably would be hopeless. But it appears that you have an arbitrary large dimensionality, but still finite. And so on this finite dimensional abelian varieties, which are some premiums of this curve, you will get again the problem of finding the rational winding. But this is still in progress, things may change. The ultimate challenge will be to say something about the gauge theory. And this is really a game, you can do, so keeping this lesson in mind, you can try to do gauge theory again with a finite temperature circle, and then put it on a three sphere of finite size. And then to simplify life, you can assume that your solutions are rotationally invariant on S3. And so that becomes essentially a problem of a gauged. So if you start here with SU2 gauge theory, which again will be complexified to SL2C, so here you'll get a gauged, essentially an abelian Higgs model on the BTZ black hole. So that would be the wall sheet. Not the BTZ black hole. The an AGS2 finite temperature. So I don't know what you call it. You quotient by so it's AGS2 with periodic time. Is there a name for it? There must be a name for it. I don't remember. Anyway. What is Poincaré disk? No, it's not Poincaré disk. Anyway, so it's not very far from the Seeger model, what I'm trying to say. This is not a Seeger model, but it's not far. So hopefully it can also be analyzed by a similar method. Thank you very much. No, and
well,
Well, do you have any notion of, so in the first part you were talking about these complex saddle points.
They're critical points, actually. They're, it's not, I don't even, yeah, critical points, yeah. But they're complex.
Do you have any notion of, so another way that you could try to analyze the energy levels in that problem is by this exact WP. Do you have any notion of how those things appear in the,
Well, to I guess, so what is an exact WQB? You're right, your wave function in the form of exponential integral PDQ, right, plus some corrections. So this integral will bound to have branching corresponding to various choices of cycles. So so presumably, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you can write a function. No, I don't know. I don't know what the connection is.
So, you have an idea of what the physical interpretation, more the general.
More degenerate.
Yes.
So, well, the elliptic curves don't degenerate too much, actually. So they, well, you can develop a cusp. That's what you're asking?
Yes.
A cusp. Well, it's, so if your potential has, so if your potential is not generic, so it has a degenerate critical point, and that's what will happen with the elliptic curve. The nature of the solution will change. Yes, maybe if that's the question. So there will be some exponents, probably some factors, additional factors, divide by 2 by 3. I don't know. Maybe there will be some. Perhaps there is some universal. Maybe there is a, there are some universality classes of how things. I haven't studied it in detail.
Okay.